Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
The city of Chicago is in chaos. The Bolsheviks have basically controlled everything now with city council and the mayor's office. It's a disaster. And I know I'm reminded constantly from my little leftist friends to not say anything because get Chicago out of your mouth. But you know what? Does that mean I also have to get Chicago taxes out of my mouth and revenue out of my mouth? The city that we love is in chaos. But to talk about this, we've asked Ted Dabrowski of wirepoints.org to join us on the Chicago Way. Ted's knowledge of finance, policy, and government stems from his 16-year international career in finance and management as the head of corporate banking and a management member of Citibank in Poland. He advised the government there on financial restructuring that continued the liberalization of the nation's economy. He has had roles in the Treasury in both Mexico and Poland, and he has managed multi-billion-dollar balance sheets and sales and trading. He's now with WirePoints as president of that organization, and we're pleased to have him. Of course, as always, Jeff Carlin is here, executive producer at WGN Radio, baker of pies, lover of cats. I'm sorry about the cat thing. And me, John Cass, husband, father, Orthodox Christian, Greek Orthodox Christian, editor-in-chief of johncassnews.com. But where are you as Chicago's future is reshaped by the Marxist vision of Brandon Johnson? And who's going to pay for it? Because I certainly am not. I'm gone. You're on the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.
So this is a guy who lives high on the hog, and he has this Tammany Hall style attitude to power. And it's the Chicago Way, absolutely.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago Way.
The Chicago Way. That's the focus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
So Ted Dabrowski, where is Chicago in with this sea of immigrants swamping the city?
Well, John, you stole my word from me that I wanted to use, and that's chaos.
Oh, I thought it was Marxist.
Yeah, well, that one too. I happened to go yesterday to downtown to Larrabee and Division to the police station there. I wanted to see it with my own eyes what things look like. And I wanted to be able to speak to the people. I'm lucky to speak Spanish, so I was able to communicate with them. And it is absolute chaos. And the first thing that comes to my mind is, we're gonna complain a lot here, but these politicians that want to say we're a welcoming city, that we're a sanctuary city, they're virtue signaling all the way. And they've been doing that for a while, but they never had a plan. They never had a plan for when all these people arrive, what was going to happen. Now they got, they're caught with their pants down. They're Pritzker's complaining and Johnson's complaining. They all want more money, of course. They want to blame everybody else for the
problem.
It's
the Republicans' fault. It's the conservative Republicans who are at fault here, from what I understand, right?
No? Yeah, Rick Pearson wrote in the Chicago Tribune today, that it's Abbott's fault. This is an Abbott-created crisis, and that's fascinating because it starts way before that, right? With Biden's changes at the border.
My advice to Rick Pearson is that he should have three more drinks and sit and fall asleep in his car in Springfield.
It's a horrible piece because it's a mess. You know, he's trying to figure out, Pearson's trying to figure out who to blame, who not to blame, how to get everybody engaged in the problem. But you know, what he doesn't mention is it's extreme chaos. And you know, I had a chance to meet two families, one with two kids, very young kids, and one with one kid, and they arrived from Venezuela 8 days ago. And you know, it's first of all, you get to the police station, and there are all these tents there, right? Just right outside.
Set that scene, because I've seen some stuff on social media that I can't wrap my head around, the tents on parkways and in between houses. And
well, this is even funnier because this is right on the premises. So you know, if you walk into the lobby, they've got it cleared out, because what they're doing is they keep the people out during the day unless they want to go use the bathrooms, which is a whole other story, by the way. Yeah. And then during the day, they're out right there in the sidewalk of the police station, and they've got, I don't know, 50 tents, maybe more. Lots of people crammed in there. You've got a lot of young men, you know, vibrant young men, and you know, they can be troublesome because they are, from what I hear, they're, you know, they like to have a good time. You got families. You got a lot of young kids. The two families that I met, they didn't have tents. A lot of the men had tents. They didn't have tents, and they hadn't figured out how to get them. And you know, the whole bathroom thing is a mess. Where I talked to a worker there, she described it as one of the most filthy things she's ever had to do in her life, because you've got all these people. There's no showers in this bathroom, so people are using sinks and all that. This is the police station on Laramie Division. And here's the thing: they have a revolving door for the police station. They weren't using that, and what you had in there, because it was raining yesterday and windy, they had five or six little kids in there playing, because that was their playpen. You know, I'm talking about real little kids. So there's no plan. They have no idea what they're doing. The people there have no idea what they're waiting on. They're waiting for work, you know, work permits. They're trying to figure out where they're going to live, and they stand around because they don't know what else to do. And you know, a lot of this goes down to the city for being so welcoming, but not being prepared.
But what, and
of course, it starts much. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. I mean, that's that. Well, we get to the start of it. I mean, they're coming in under the auspice of asylum. These people, I'm assuming, they're not just people who are hopping the fence, getting on a bus, and coming straight here. I mean, they're having some sort of interaction with some authority before they come here. And what is? And it seems like their expectation when they get here is not being fulfilled by any means. I mean, what are they telling you?
Well, Jeff, let me say this before I start.
Yeah.
You know, close the damn border. Right. Don't let more people in because we can't handle it.
Right.
And that's the starting point of this whole discussion.
Sure.
That said, we do have a humanitarian crisis on our hands, because what they told me, the Venezuelan guy told me with his family, he said, look, I know people are coming here. I know they're making it easy to come here, or, you know, they're welcoming. He says, if I knew that border was closed, I wouldn't come. But he said, I know it's open, so I'm coming. And this is the message they're getting is come on, because, you know, You can find a better life. Now, you know, these guys are from Venezuela, and if we all know what's happened in Venezuela recently, right? They're saying they're trying to live on $20 a month. The hospitals don't work. Water doesn't come to the houses. The lights don't come on. It's a disaster in Venezuela. So you maybe can understand, not maybe, you can understand why people would flee. Yeah. Although what people said is, I'd much rather live in Venezuela, that's my home country, than move to the U.S. But given the situation and my kids and my family, I'm going to go look for opportunity. And so they've come here, and I mean, a lot of these people have gone over this pass, and you know, I didn't pay attention to the Darien Pass. Have you guys paid attention to that? That huge, huge jungle right between Colombia and Panama, and they're having to go to risk their lives for 5 days of climbing. You know, you're talking about 2 months of travel for the people coming from Venezuela. It's big stuff, and so therefore, you've got these people who've struggled in whatever ways you want to look at it. Now they're here. And they're sitting around sleeping in you know, sidewalks, and it's tough.
Why are we here? Because I think we have to explain to people why we're here. You mentioned early on that there's a lot of feelings, because that's how we govern ourselves now. Yeah. Not with analysis, not with budgets, not with numbers, but with feelings. And there were many feelings about, let's be welcoming, because we had to be welcoming. because, you know, feelings. So they asked people of from all over the world to come here because we're the sanctuary city. We're the American city. We're the city of immigrants. Please come here. But we never had a plan to deal with them.
I met one of the ladies, fantastic lady. I feel like I'm not sure if I should be talking about her, but because she was so strong, you know, diminutive Mexican woman, 30 years living in the U.S., loves Chicago. I mean, you could hear it in her voice. And now she's so frustrated. She says that these politicians are destroying Chicago. She never wanted to leave Chicago. Now she's like, man, I don't know what to do here. And, you know, she was an immigrant herself. And so she was the one that had to clean up their messes. She's the one that organized. I saw a bunch of young men try to come in and go to that bathroom. She goes, nope, you are not going in there right now. It's closed. And she ran a damn, you know, it's amazing. Such a small woman with such strength. But she's in charge of all that. And
what's her rank? Is she a deputy police chief or what?
She was a cleaning lady contractor.
But
she had the role of keeping them out. And, you know, and I have to tell you, it looked really good in there for whatever she was doing. And, you know, they have food coming in all the time. But I'll tell you, you could see it in people's eyes. And what I really did like, and John, I know we're all, you know, descendants of immigrants. So
yes.
You know, my mom came from Ecuador. She was 19. My dad came from Poland when he was, you know, his early 20s. I lived the first generation, you know, immigrant life.
Me too.
So I know a little bit about it. But you know, what I love about these people who come, and again, with this Mexican lady who works there told me, it's like there's a lot of tough guys, some of them not good guys. You know, she said, hey, you know, some of that stuff that Trump was saying about some bad guys, they're here. She sees them. But by the same token, she said, there's a lot of great people. And most of the guys I talked to yesterday said, all I want to do is work. I want to work. I don't want to sit here and do nothing. I want to work. I want to, you know, work in a construction, but let me feed my kids. Right. Let me feed my family. I want to be independent. And that's true.
And there's no pipelines for any of that to happen because like we've been emphasizing, there was no plan.
There's no plan. Yeah. So, you know, I give a lot of credit to them. Now that said, you know, I want the border closed, right? That's the immediate plan. And I heard a lot of people say the same thing when I was there, because they said, look, if it's open, we're coming. You know, this is the greatest country on earth.
Right.
You know, we're trying to mess it up, but, you know, people want to come just like your parents, my parents, they wanted the opportunity and freedom and they got it here. But, what we're doing now is kind of the reverse.
What your parents did and my parents, when they came here as immigrants, they adopted, they sought to assimilate. And they adopted the ways of this country and the culture of this country into their own. So that at our house, my father had strict rules. We had to speak English in our home.
Oh, love it.
Because we, you know why? And we're like, but Dad, we're Greek. And Dad, he's like, no, you're not. Because if you go over to the village, if we go back to the village, you know what they're going to call you? Americani. They're not going to call you Greek. Speak English. This is your home. This is where you grew up. This is where we moved to. And that's the rule. But I don't see that. I don't see people doing that. And there's no emphasis on that from the political leadership because they want all these separate groups that are broken up by language. They want a balkanization of the United States, just like the good Marxists have wanted for many, many years. And they have it now, don't they?
Yeah, you know, I want to echo something you said. For my dad, the assimilation, well, for my parents, but the assimilation was so key. Mm-hmm. You know, if I was speaking Spanish with my mom, but he wanted us to learn the other languages, right?
Yes.
But man, we were going to learn English because English was going to help us to succeed in America. That was
right.
Well, like any of the old immigrants, that's what you did, right? You assimilated, you educated yourself, and you succeeded. That's not happening today, which is a whole other discussion about what's happening in our schools, right? But the kids can't read, they can't write, and we try all these bilingual things and all that. No, teach them English, teach them how to succeed in America, teach them how to succeed in business, right? And all that. So we've gotten so far away from that. You're right.
Well, we should focus again, I'm thinking, before we get into a story of how Jeff learned Gaelic as a boy.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Playing keeper, goalkeeper for Palatine Celtic.
My grandparents were immigrants.
There you go. So. We'll get into that. But for, you know, what about where wirepoints.org is? Because how do you pick your stories? How do you and Mark Glennon pick your stories to choose what to emphasize?
What's research? Because you know how you guys are really research heavily directed. Really?
Right.
Well, you know, we're a small group, and so that makes it hard because this is like whack-a-mole, right? Sure. You know, it's
tell me about it. Yeah.
And I think this kind of gets to the problem of Chicago is that, and the leadership, and also Illinois. You need competent leaders to focus on real problems and fix real problems and have a plan, as we were saying. And instead, we have all these so many problems. If you read the budget, which we'll get to in a minute, you know, there's a whole bunch of stuff on equity, and you have all these paragraphs and chapters on equity, and you're like, wait a minute, how do you manage something on equity? And so what's being left out is just the good old blocking and tackling of government. You know, do you understand what your goals are? Are you going to base your goals on merit and competence and achievement, and therefore design your budget around that? Or are you going to do a bunch of loosey-goosey things that nobody can figure out what's going on? So at Wirepoints, you know, we're in a bit of a predicament because these things pop up, and, you know, we like to be factual about what we write about, and we like to be data-centric about what we write about. And, you know, things like this immigration, we're having to learn it as we go because, you know, it's one thing to talk about what's happening globally and all that, but it's another to know what the facts are and who are these people and you know, how much money have we spent and where's the money going and you know, who's enriching themselves from all this, right? Because there's a bunch of people enriching themselves. But this is a good example. You know, my colleague Mark Glennon is going to be writing a piece on immigration and I'm going to bring this to life. And this is why I wanted to go see it myself. I don't want to read it from reports. I want to be able to like feel what's going on, see what's going on, and then start to put the data behind it and let's figure out. It's, you know, obviously we're just gonna be critical and negative about it, but there's lives being destroyed. Listen, we haven't even talked about the other side of the lives, right, which are the blacks in particular, but many Latinos too, who feel like they're just getting stuff crammed down their throat, you know, like their park district being taken away. And you know, we did spend a bit of time on this on immigration, and that, my gosh, you know, this goes back to Johnson. Think about the things you haven't fixed yet. You haven't touched crime yet. You haven't touched property taxes yet. Forget pensions, right? That's another big monster.
Oh, God.
You know, you haven't ever talked about schools in the way that we talk about schools, right? We're just, you know, whatever it is, you know, 10 out of every 100 black kids can read a grade level. When are you going to work on that? And so the problems are so deep and so broad. And yet he's focused on all other kinds of things. And if you listen to what he says, it's a bunch of mumbo jumbo, sadly. And instead of focusing on, I mean, we could sit down with him and right now lay out five problems
to tackle. The media in Chicago, the media, which is corrupt in my view, I've only spent my life in it. I understand where the fault lines are. I understand who, like the backstories of people, like pro-combine reporters, like political reporters like Rick Pearson, and leftist softies, they have allowed this to happen because they did not hold political actors to account. So we have school boards that allow billions of dollars to be spent of taxpayer money. Kids can't read. They can't add.
Yeah.
They can't subtract. They don't know, Jeff, where the to follow a celestial body. They can't... They can't look up the Milky Way in the sky. They can't read. They can't think.
Yeah, that's cool.
And so that's where we're in trouble. What about the issue that Ted just brought up, which is, and Ted, let's examine this. I've been writing about this for quite some time. Black residents feel betrayed by the political structure of Chicago that takes their parks away to give to refugees, migrants, and they're just pushed off the corner. How does that work politically? How does that work in real terms, Ted?
Well, yeah, if people haven't watched the video of the Park District discussion, they allowed the community to speak up, and very impressive at how the blacks were able to say, hey, you know, this is our park district. We've waited a long time to get these kind of things. We're taxpayers too. And suddenly, without any discussion, right? And this is a big part of it. There's no local discussion. There's no local decision making. You know, Pritzker / Johnson, they just try to shove things down people's throat. And right. And now they're seeing. I love what this one woman said. Hey, listen, you're screwing over your voters so you can take care of people who don't have a vote for you. And you know, that was a good point of saying you're banding us for people that aren't even residents or citizens from here.
But will black Democrats vote against Democrats? Because Biden has opened the borders. Pritzker has allowed it. All these people are playing games with them. When will black voters call the Democrats to account? That's my question.
Well, see, now, I'd love to say, John, that it's getting close to where we get some changes. But then you get into the whole side of, well, is the other side, yeah, let's call it the Republican side, are they prepared to message it properly and not take – they're not. And this is the problem. So blacks will – they're right. Angry. They're very angry. They've seen the weakness of Pritzker and others and then how they treat them. But yet they may not see the opposition and where to go for the opposition and that there's a good opposition out there that messages this thing right. Instead, they'll see a bunch of Republicans just say silly things or something or won't address the issue well. And blacks will continue what they do, which is vote for blacks.
My Democrats belief, and maybe I'm wrong here, gentlemen, to you, Jeff, and to you, Ted, is that the Republicans don't want to engage because they're afraid of their own constituents. They want to support, they want free, cheap labor coming to satisfy the Tyson chicken processors and all that. They want that. They want cheap labor. And so they're not going to stem the immigration. They want cheap factory workers. Yes?
I'm sure it's part of the calculus. I mean, that certainly absolutely influences some of the votership. But I think some of it more probably just comes from this, the idea of just opposing the nearsighted and idiocy that they see presented before them, because it's not too hard to just not want to be in support of that and not necessarily think about it in the terms you're saying. But I think the budget, because I really want to get Ted's take on this before we cut him loose here, is kind of devoid of any structural changes that he was promising. It's a lot of window dressing is my read on it. And that kind of speaks to the idea of like the Austin community who's having their, you know, field house taken away. And, you know, it's a black community and they're seeing it being overrun by.
It's his,
you know,
community.
Right. And so, you know, what are we seeing here? Is it just window dressing as I've described?
Yeah. Let me answer that, Jeff, but let me just hit one point that John asked about the Republicans. And, you know, I think ascribing your thought, John, that they just want cheap labor, that would be if they were being that smart and thoughtful about it. But I don't think so. I think it's the other way around. They don't know what to do with Hispanics. And for me, it's a slam dunk.
They don't know what they stand for. Yeah.
They don't know what they stand for. And if you think about Hispanics, right, they're so family oriented, right? They don't like woke stuff. Right, they love family.
They're Catholic.
They love to have.
They're patriarchal.
Right, and
daddy runs the house. Yeah, right.
Yeah, and they love to have children. Yeah. Right, so they like family values. Well, you know, the Democrats these days don't like family, so it should be easy, right? And the Hispanics broadly don't like woke stuff. So there's an opening there. The Hispanics like school choice. If they know about school choice, they'd much rather send their kids to a Catholic school or a private school than the public school.
Right.
You know, they're very entrepreneurial. Look, these guys will go out and start a company tomorrow. They don't need. So these are great. If you think about it, these are great future Republicans. These are great future. And if you don't want to talk about parties, these are people who like family values, school choice, entrepreneurship, you know, but we don't know how to talk. Well, I say we, the Republicans don't know how to talk to them. And so therefore they stay away from it, or they say silly things and make a mess. So
because they speak Spanish the way Ed Burke speaks Spanish, donde esta, you know, or something like that.
Enchiladas,
Yeah, enchiladas. Yeah. So talk about the budget now. One real thing is, where's the budget?
Where's the budget? Well, the budgets have become really, really difficult to talk about because they don't really mean anything anymore. Right. You know, it used to be that you could do like a financial analysis and figure things out, but I can't remember if we talked about this last time we talked, but today's budget is more than 50% bigger than the budget before COVID. God.
Right.
So imagine, you know, if you had a household income in Chicago, $70,000 right before COVID, now your income would be $105,000. Well, that's not happening to most people. Most people are struggling with whatever they had before. Maybe they got some couple inflation raises, but you know, nobody has 50% more money. They're not making 50% more. But the Chicago government, Brandon Johnson, has 50% more than Lightfoot had in 2019. So the question is, where does all that money go? You're talking about it's almost $6 billion more. So the budget back then was $10 billion. Now it's $16 billion. So where's that $6 billion going? And who's getting it, right? And some of that was inflationary. Some of that was whatever, COVID stuff. Some of
it
will
go away. Is this government like they paid for PPP loans? Like where everybody was defrauding the federal government on the PPP loans? Is that what we're seeing?
Well, we're just seeing that money's just been handed out, right? I mean, it's been spent. And you know, it's hard to track, right? For guys like us, it used to be easier. But you know, now it's, you know, equity laden language, and it's a joke. And what we have to do is wait for the federal money to stop flowing, and this will be probably the last bit of it we see, and then we're going to see what really happens. And so in this case, even though Johnson has $6 billion more than back then, he still wants $1 billion more for stuff, right? He promised $1 billion more in spending that he can't do yet, $800 million of which he was going to tax the rich, right? Corporations and the rich. Yeah. He hasn't been able to get that done yet. And so, you know, can't you find the money you want out of the $6 billion extra dollars? And so it's you know, he took $400 million for the TIFs. So that's the other slush fund. We've been complaining about that for years. And you know, it always seems to be, oh, we're not gonna make budget, and then suddenly here comes the TIF money. So right. And that's not something we can actually analyze because you can't get the data. So it's a fool's game.
How do people get involved with wirepoints.org? What can they do to help to be part of this?
Yeah, because you guys are going to – I'm sure you guys will take this thing apart in detail, because I know it just recently came out, and it's a hefty read.
Well, it's a hefty read, but again, you know, I was going to complain, but you know, all you need to do is read last year's, and it looks like this year's. just move, you know, throw a few more equity words in there. So you know, so at wirepoints.org, we're just trying to get these messages out, and you know, the more people that share wirepoints.org helps. We're gonna have to get a little bit more activist, I think, as Wirepoints, if we can get there, because you know, we know that in Illinois, journalism alone isn't enough, especially when you look at traditional media. They still swamp. I think one of my biggest concerns is that, you know, Governor Pritzker, when you think about it, he spent, $260 million on his own campaigns for the two campaigns. Then he spent, you know, however much he spent on Bailey's campaign. He spent for the progressive tax campaign. He spent on the Supreme Court justice campaign. Where does most of that money go? Media. A lot of it goes to media on campaigns. So the media is beholden to Governor Pritzker because, you know, he spent a lot of money on, you know, you name whichever traditional media you want. He spent a lot of money on commercials, et cetera. So they won't go against them.
And look at the quality. Look at the quality of reporting. On one side of the town, you have Pearson, okay, God forbid. And the other side of town, you have Lenny Sweet, who's, you know, making a hero of Tony Preckwinkle. It's like a bleep in comedy. And in the middle of all that, and then you have like lightweights on broadcast on television. It's a bleeping comedy at the same time.
Comedy of dramas.
At the same time, they're building a Chinese battery factory in Illinois. Tell us about that.
Well, that's another one of those force it down your throats situation. You know, we saw in Joliet, if you guys were keeping up with that, where the Joliet Township wanted money from the state to house migrants, right?
Yeah.
but the city of Joliet didn't know anything about it, and so they're going to try to force that down their throats. Then we had, of course, we just talked about the Park District in Amundsen in Austin. They were going to try to shove that down people's throats. Well, same thing's happening with a $2 billion battery factory, electric vehicle battery factory in Manteno. And the people in Manteno had no idea this was coming. And next thing you know, they're hearing that they're going to get this massive battery plant. Nobody understands the ownership of the battery plant. It's Chinese owned. There's lots of concerns about China these days, rightfully so.
The Goshen project.
Exactly. Goshen is the company. Concerns about the environment. It uses like 500 million gallons, a huge number of gallons a day. What about the environmental concerns? What about the fact this is a farm country and the people don't want this stuff? So a lot of concerns. There's been no transparency from Pritzker. No transparency from the locals.
Wait, I think you're underselling it. What about the Chicago Tribune parroting? I'm just reading this. The Chicago Tribune parrots Pritzker's complaint that right wingers are opposed to Goshen. Now, how does that work?
So nobody knows what's really going on. What vetting was done? There's going to be $8 billion in subsidies for this $2 billion plant. In other words, there's going to be $3 million spent per job created, which is a crazy, ridiculous number. And it's going to a Chinese company that has close ties to CCP, if you read their bylaws. So it's all there in black and white. The problem is if you ask any questions about that or challenge and ask what vetting was done, which is what the Senate Republicans did, you know, Pritzker comes back with, well, you're MAGA Republicans, you're xenophobic. And of course, the Tribune says the same stuff. What happened to like a good old vetting process? Not to mention, by the way, that the Democrats at the national level have been the ones sounding the alarm about China in very big ways. They're the ones, you know, you got Blinken, you've got the whole team of Biden's team really concerned about China.
Yeah,
and a TikTok, and next thing you know, if you ask a question about Goshen, you're labeled as a MAGA Republican xenophobe. So it's a real mess, and again, one of those where we need clarity.
What I really don't understand, Jeff and Ted, is that the Chicago Tribune, which was once the voice of clarity on such matters, is now so rudderless, so lost, so woke, kind of like the rest of the country under Biden, that they can't even write a story without condemning Republicans for questioning the Chinese Communist Party's investment in Illinois? I don't understand how that works. Really, I don't.
Well, you know, if there's one good thing coming out of all this stuff, John, and you're asking about the blacks and they're being upset in Chicago, if there's one thing is that things are getting crazier, and I don't know. I mean, of course they can get crazier, and this is always about pendulum swinging. And the pendulum's still swinging really far, let's just say far to the left, right?
Yeah, sure.
But the crazier it gets, the more now there's the opportunity for the opposition. I'll just call it the opposition. There's an opportunity for the opposition to be heard if they can say the right things, because it's gone so far, the wokeness in schools, it's gone so far with this immigration. It's going so far with crime. You know, Brandon Johnson, every time he opens his mouth, he's saying things that just don't make sense to most people. So this is a huge opportunity on our side, on the opposition side, to kind of reorient the principles that we should be following in our country, in Chicago and Illinois. So the principles, what the true reforms are, what the true goals are. And if we can't do it, then it's our fault, because if we can't present how bad of a mess they've made of this state and this country and the city, then it's on us. So it's a big opportunity.
Ted Dabrowski of WirePoints, we look forward to the stories that WirePoints will highlight for us as we try to make sense of Illinois' confusion and chaos in a media landscape where we can't trust the media. So thanks for all you do.
Yeah, you and Mark, they're great. Good stuff.
You and Mark Lennon.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
For Ted Dabrowski of Wire Points, some clarity amidst the confusion of Illinois. And for Jeff Carlin, executive producer of WGN Radio. And I'm not going to say about Friends of Cats or Baker of Pies, because Jeff is so much more than that. And maybe someday we'll get into it. And for me, John Cass, executive director of, or executive editor of johncassnews.com, your favorite website for common sense. Have a cup of common sense. Subscribe to John Cass News and maybe have a sausage from Joseph's. Yeah, we'll come out with stuff. Thanks for joining us on another episode of The Chicago Way, and we'll talk to you again next time on The Chicago Way podcast on WGN+.